Backup is good. Well, you want to do a show?
Let's do this.
Let's do a show.
Hello and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life. I'm Aaron Flores.
And I am Brock Dittus. We are broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Our show covers bicycling, trains, and transit, and simpler living, and today, two guys with microphones.
Two guys on mics.
Who doesn't like that?
That's right.
Yeah.
Today in the studio we have us. Well,
yes. You've never met me before. My name is Brock Dittus. It's a pleasure for you to have me on my show, I'm sure. Wait. I'm not sure what I meant by that. Anyway. First things first, thank you so much for running the show while I've been away.
Oh, this is all right.
It's been fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. You had a little bit of travel of yourself, which we'll talk about in a minute, I'm sure. Yeah. You bumped into a famous personality who's not here with us today.
No.
But I'm
well,
sure.
Well, I didn't. Let's clarify. I didn't personally bump into this personality. I just benefited from said personality.
Okay. Well, you don't like to be touched. So.
That, yeah.
Yeah. It's okay. I'm trying to remember what else. I mean, there are a couple more things to wrap up from the tour, I'm sure. And it's hot in Portland. So damn hot.
Was it not this hot while you were out biking?
So let me tell you the difference. Do you mind turning that music down
just a smidge
more? I like the music, but I just want... Oh, that's perfect. Yeah. Just about that much of it in my ears.
I realize, like, as
I'm
we're
sorry.
Getting... No, no. As
I'm
we're
a
getting
micro
more,
manager.
In, more in detail.
Mm, yeah.
Like... Now I got to actually listen to what you're saying.
That's right. So the trick between being in the woods in the mountains and being down here in Portland, because what's our elevation? We thought a lot about elevation when we were out on our trip, and I still don't know the elevation of Portland proper.
I don't think it's all that high.
Because we're maybe like 50 feet above sea level or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, we're down by the water, and you're going for the information.
Yep.
All
I'm
right.
going to do
Well,
it.
You let me know what you come up with, because I'm more curious about it now than I've ever been. But when you're at altitude in the woods and in the mountains, the air is thinner, so less humidity de facto, and you're closer to a lot more breezes, I think. So, like, the temperatures are generally cooler in the mountains than they are down in the valleys.
I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. So, while it was hot, and while it was definitely hot in the sunshine, it always cooled off, and it was never, like, oppressively hot during the day. I think getting back to flatland and valleys and that sort of thing, the hardest part for me to get used to is, in fact, the air pressure and the temperature.
Oh, yeah.
And the humidity. So, yeah. What did you find?
So, you said something around 50?
That was my guess.
That is exactly what it states.
Are you serious?
At its highest point. It's 1,188 feet.
Okay. And its highest point is Council Crest?
It's not really saying.
Okay.
Where it is.
That would be my guess.
I believe this has actually been up to some scrutiny
okay.
at one point.
The elevation of the highest point in Portland?
Where exactly it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a Pedalpalooza ride themed around it. And that data, either someone has it or not. But I don't know.
I bet our wonderful listeners will tell us.
You know, it's true. Again, quoting the wise man, Mark Maron, why Google when you can speculate?
When you can speculate.
Yeah. Yes. I like that a lot better, honestly.
It's colored my life.
Yeah. I was talking to somebody about that not too long ago, and just the idea that, like, it's actually a good idea to let things roll around in your head for a while. Because, like, if you get used to answers as soon as you want them, then none of them mean anything. And if you wait to research something and let that idea roll around in your head, it's almost like a sieve. Like, the small ideas, the ones that aren't really important, will filter through, like, whatever mesh is inside your brain.
Okay.
And then the really important ones will sit there right next to your cortex and be like, hey, this is a good question. Ask this one.
Oh,
so instead of, like, eight questions that pop into your head every day, you're like, you know, where is the nearest Pine State Biscuits? How can I get a beer right now? You know, some of those things, you just let them alone. And they roll around. And, you know, the question about biscuits might not necessarily need to be answered. So,
or it might be answered in your quest for existential truth.
Well, that's true. Yes, if you don't have any, like clear values, then biscuits may in fact be the thing you want. Yeah. Well, hey, let me before we go too much farther.
Oh yeah.
Excuse me, just a moment.
Oh yeah, well, we should crack open.
You know,
some
honestly,
things.
Before we go too much farther, we should thank our generous sponsor, the Beer Mongers, because
talk.
No, we were over there. We just talked to Andrew, the bartender. And he told us, number one, that this week is, what is it, the Oregon Brewers Festival?
Oh, yes, the OBF.
Yeah, it's happening all week, Wednesday. So if you're lucky enough to hear this, like as soon as it comes out on Tuesday, and you are in the Portland area or close enough to the Portland area to go to the Beer Mongers, there is a, what is it, the Eugene, like,
the
brewery
Oak.
That's it.
The Okaskey.
Yeah, the Okaskey.
Okaskey.
Yeah, so Oak. I'm going to say Oak Ridge because I've been there all weekend, but
not,
Oak,
it's Oakshire.
I can't believe I forgot that.
It's like one of your favorite brewers, too.
I like them a lot,
Their espresso stout.
It's amazing. In fact, I just gave that to one of my friends who isn't really a beer person, but was curious, and I was like, try this and tell me what you think. So I need to check in and find out if you liked it or not.
Oh.
But yes, the Oakshire Brewing and Ninkasi are both going head-to-head at, is that the Beer Mongers?
Yes.
I believe it is.
Yeah.
Wednesday night. The 23rd. So if you want to go and see something happen, there are going to be some fantastic beers from those two there.
I believe on the poster it was like two dudes from, it's not Avatar. Avatar was going to be the movie title until it was stolen by James Cameron.
Oh, really? So the one with the blue people, that was Avatar. What was supposed to be Avatar?
Well, I think the cartoon is actually called Avatar.
Okay. gotcha.
Yeah, but there was a live-action version of it called The Last Airbender, and it was...
Oh, I see.
It was ruined by M. Night Shyamalan.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He got his fingers in there, and suddenly there was a twist.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so it goes. Well, the other thing about the Beer Mongers is that there's a lot of great decor in that place, and if you should happen to be in there and you are lucky enough to find the rear booth, like right by the door that goes to the restrooms, if you sit down in the rear booth, there is a picture of their cyclocross team.
The whole team.
Yeah, yeah. So that's one thing. I think we were talking to him about playing almost like a hide-and-seek, like Where's Waldo of Beer Mongers,
right.
Where you just go in and say, like, where's that thing that they talked about? So number one, the stick.
You
haven't seen the big stick.
And people have talked, or have seen that.
Yeah. They have, yeah. There's been pictures on Twitter about the stick.
About the stick.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
So there's the cyclocross team. And if you should find, like, a painting of a creepy toe-headed boy.
I was going to say, should we talk about the haunted picture?
I think that's like the major leagues for Where's Waldo Beermonger's version.
It's like the portrait of Dorian Gray.
Well, it's a really creepy picture of a little blonde child. Looks kind of sad. And I don't know why it's there.
It's kind of sad or angry.
And I don't know. Yeah. Anyways.
No, nobody knows the story. They just know it's there.
So if you see that one, I think that we give like a prize to someone who sees that.
There you go.
If we see that on Twitter.
I'll give you bonus level. Yeah,
hashtag Sprocket Contest. Does that work?
Yeah, sure.
And tag it at the Beer Mongers.
There you go. Tag the Beer Mongers.
Yeah.
Definitely need to include them somehow.
Definitely. Yeah. So speaking of them, thank you so much for the beverages. And I got themed beers because I've been to both California and Oregon in the past couple of weeks. So I'm starting
first
with...
you're starting with...
Sierra Nevada's River Ride Rye IPA. Mm. Because we did not go to Chico, but we were encouraged to go to Chico. And we turned down that device because that's where Sierra Nevada is from.
Right.
But this is a California beer, so I'm going to start with that one.
There you go. As you started your tour in California.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me about your travels, because you've been some places.
I've been at least two places.
Yeah. That's impressive.
I'm kind of impressed on how multimodal these last two trips have been for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're a brand new member of Car2Go.
Yes.
Yeah. Which I'm glad.
I just attached myself on Anna's account.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You're a brand new member.
But, yes. Yeah. And so I can drive a Car2Go. And that was my first adventure.
Can you tell me about driving Car2Go? What was your experience like?
Well, the first one was stressful as fuck. Mm. And I think you've had these same stresses.
Oh, yeah.
And
wait, did you hit the cell phone pocket?
I tried. No.
Okay.
I tried to learn from your mistakes, but apparently I didn't learn well enough.
So what was the mistake?
I can't park near the airport.
Oh, true. It's outside the boundaries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought, okay, well, I'll just park at the Target over there.
Like at the, what is it called? The
I think it's the Mount Hood.
Oh, yeah.
Or the
Wait,
Cascade
and you were
station.
On your way to a flight?
Yeah.
So were you late?
I was not.
Oh, good.
I don't know. There were supernatural powers looking out for me, I think. I don't know why I wasn't late.
Okay.
I started there.
Did you leave with extra time?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I didn't think I left with that much time,
right,
in all
right.
honesty.
Yeah, because the boundary for car to go is nowhere near the airport.
No, apparently.
Yeah?
It is not. It is not.
Oh.
No, yeah.
So you're saying I'm correct.
You no. Yes, we have no bananas.
Oh, 30,000 pounds of bananas. Yeah, no, the boundary is like up at Killingsworth or something. And I'm
is
not
that,
sure. It might even be farther
well,
away.
That's
far
at
east.
Least further north than where I ended up because I just got so frustrated with it.
Oh, really?
I kept working my way down the red line.
Uh-huh.
Like
the red line light rail.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Because you know that goes to the airport.
It does. So you can get on that and go to the airport once you've parked a car to go.
Right. And so I start at Mount Hood, then Cascades.
Uh-huh.
Like literally just going down from the line.
So tell me, which side of the freeway were you on?
The correct side?
Oh, sure. I mean, like, were you on the east side or the west side? Because I believe that's the dividing
line. I think I was on
line.
The east side. That, okay.
Yeah.
So all I had to do was, like, well, but I, yeah, it would still make it a little bit difficult, I guess.
Yeah, and there's no clear boundaries. Just like a lot of things. Like, you can't look at the boundary of, like, say the boundary between U.S. and Canada. It's just like
right.
a parallel. It is just like said, hey, let's take this
right.
portion of the globe. This belongs to us. This belongs to you. Car to go is not quite like that. There's like a bunch of squiggly lines. And I live technically 5 to 10 blocks outside of their
oh, really?
Operating area. But it's small enough a distance that I can just walk out and find a car if I need one. But I can't take it home. So.
Oh.
And, I mean, unless
right.
I want to pay
well,
for it.
Right, right. Unless you want to keep it that
I have turned
time.
A car to go around in my backyard before.
Oh. That's awesome.
I mean, yeah. Let's say that I didn't violate I treated car to go as car to go wants their vehicles to be treated. We'll say
right.
that. Yeah.
You turned it around with respect.
I did. I did. I did not violate the contract.
There you go.
So.
I took off on this car to go and just kept going down the line till I got to, it's on Sandy.
Okay.
Park Rose.
Park Rose Summer.
Park Rose. Yeah. Station. And there's like a park and ride. And I'm like, okay, there's a park and ride. You gotta be able to like,
good news.
How great would it be to have a car to go like at your park and ride?
Definitely.
You know?
Yeah. So car to go, just in case anybody doesn't know, private car rental company that allows you to take point-to-point trips. So you can pick it up one place, drop it off another,
yeah.
within their boundaries. They're leaving Eugene, I heard. Eugene, Oregon, because apparently there's not enough demand for their service. But the interesting
it's
thing about...
It's a small town. Like,
is,
geographically speaking, it's small.
It's a college town, but I think college kids are probably far more prone to have bicycles than they are to have a car to go.
Yeah, well, and Mark... More likely to just ride their bike than to pay for it.
Right. Yeah. Bikes are free once you get one.
Yeah.
And as long as you can stand its state of maintenance. Yeah.
There was a few people I witnessed last night that I wasn't sure should be on a bicycle.
Yeah. But Eugene, anyways, they shut down the service, I think partially because they broke it up into a bunch of different parcels. So there was like all these different islands of car to go service.
Like they gerrymandered it in a way?
You might be able to drive it from one like island to another, but you couldn't stop in between. So maybe it was useful, maybe it wasn't.
Okay, so.
But there should be, okay. So
spoiler alert.
Yes, yes.
Car to go redeemed themselves in Seattle.
Yes.
And I'll get to that in a little bit. But first off, this first trip frustrated me so much.
Uh-huh.
Like, yeah, I just said, fuck it. And I like drove, I drove almost back to my house.
Really?
Yeah. And I just parked it in this random spot, like on like Burnside and 90 something.
Yeah.
And just like turned off the car and was like, God, please just end my trip.
Yeah.
And it did. And then I biked to the Gateway Station.
On your Brompton?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yes. Yeah. I had my Brompton with
nice.
Me.
Nice.
Well, had Clever Cycles prompting that I rented.
At some point, didn't Cardigo say hashtag multimodal?
Yeah. Well, that was our trip in Seattle that we took.
Oh, pardon me for jumping ahead.
That's all right. So, but after that experience, I was like, "Fuck Cardigo, I'm not touching that thing again."
Until later.
Yeah. Fast forward to when we're in Seattle, and we realize like, if we bike back to our Airbnb, Anna and I, we would be late to this wedding that we were supposed to go to. Lo and behold, there's a car to go there.
How about that?
Our Portland subscription work in Seattle?
Good question.
Well, it does.
Hey.
we were like, well, I'll scan it and find out. What do we got to lose? We're already screwed anyways.
Yeah. Fortunately, that's the best kind of roulette, because every time you scan your car to go card on a car to go, you can drive it.
Yeah. Really?
Well, so I mean, like, unless it's out of service.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Unless it's outside the, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was great. It saved our asses and it totally redeemed the car to go experience.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So you're back in the club.
I'm back in.
Excellent. Well, it's a really useful service. It is.
It came at just the right time in that particular case.
Yeah.
You know, we were going to run late. If we were on bikes, mostly not due to mileage, but due to those fucking hills.
Geography.
Man.
Yeah. Seattle is pretty lumpy. About as lumpy as well, as much as like Astoria or San Francisco or whatever.
Yeah. Apparently I didn't do as much biking the last time I was there.
Ah.
I brought my disc trucker with me the last time.
Right,
and
right.
I was like, yeah, there's hills. It's, it's cool.
Is that when you found, was it Bruce Lee's grave?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. Yeah.
But this time you had Bromptons and hill climbing harder?
No, the gearing was fairly similar. I think I might have had, like, on the disc trucker, I might have, like, a little bit more on the low end and a little bit more on the high end.
But, okay.
I mean, yeah, it's six speeds on a Brompton versus, three up front and nine in the back on my disc trucker.
Ah.
It wasn't difficult other than the fact that every time I had to go anywhere, there was a climb. Our Airbnb was located at the bottom of this hill.
Yeah.
And of course, everything in Seattle is located at the bottom of a hill.
Yeah. I was listening to, the bonus downloads on the Lake Wobegon monologue from Prairie Home Companion podcast.
Uh-huh.
And they had, Garrison had written, some sort of song or poem about how people are always going up in Seattle.
Oh.
Always climbing.
Well, I could see why.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very accurate, I think. There really is no flat land. So,
no. Yeah. And speaking of no flat land.
So
my first trip was to Missoula, Montana.
It was.
Yeah. And so this was like the ultimate in multimodal transport.
Yeah.
Like getting from point A to point B.
Uh-huh.
Started off car to go, got on my Brompton.
Car to Brompton, to airport.
Yeah. Well, to
light rail.
To light rail, then to airport.
Okay.
And then back to Brompton, and I took the Brompton from the Missoula airport all the way to my brother's house.
And I've never been to the Missoula airport. I've been there twice, both times stayed with your brother.
House.
Yeah, exactly. And so the airport is a long ways out of town, and your brother lives on a big-ass hill.
They are about as opposite ends of the of the town as you can be on.
And still considered, like, Missoula?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Missoula's infrastructure is coming up, though.
Yeah?
Like, for their size of the city, I think it's really good.
I'd venture a guess they're the best in bike infrastructure in Montana. I'm not sure about that. I haven't been widely around the state.
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't know. That's the only town I've really ever been in Montana.
There are other college towns in Montana as well, but I think that's probably kind of the preeminent one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got the university. It's the biggest city in Montana.
Is it?
Yeah.
Missoula?
Yep.
Really?
Last I checked.
Oh, okay. Well, that would explain a lot of things. I was imagining Helena as this enormous metropolis, but
because it's the capital,
right?
I think it was at one point.
Okay, but not necessarily the case.
No.
Yeah. So, how long were you in Missoula?
I was in Missoula from Saturday to Wednesday.
Okay.
And I honestly didn't do as much biking as I thought I was going to do.
Well, you did as much as anyone would be expected to do by going to your brother's house. What's that neighborhood called? Do you remember?
I don't remember the name
because it's up in the southeast hills or whatever. It's
Hillview is the name of the big road.
Oh, yeah.
So it wouldn't surprise me if that's the name of the neighborhood.
Not as you might expect a view of a hill, but rather the hill that the view is from. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I took that road twice the first time accidentally.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I took a wrong turn and I ended up going kind of like the back way.
I think I did that the first time too.
Yeah. Yeah. Tito mentioned that.
Is that by the Walmart?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. You end up on Garrett.
Yes.
Which I doubt any of our listeners know.
Welcome to the Missoula Infrastructure Podcast.
But you end up on this hill that pretty much just goes directly up. Or you are on this road that goes directly up the hill.
Yeah.
And I was just like, well, I'm this far. I know the house is up there.
Just going to keep on going.
And yeah. And so that's all I could do. I was out of water.
Oh, man, that climb without water is terrible.
Oh, gosh. I stopped at this church and was like, maybe they have a spigot outside.
Did they have a spigot of water?
They did not.
No.
I thought, like, well, maybe I can, like, use their Wi-Fi. Because every now and then a church will have Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
It's not very secure. Mm-hmm. And then I, like, call my brother. And I don't know. I got nervous being there for too long.
Okay. Worried about people looking at you sideways.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you do have a mohawk right now.
I do have a mohawk.
Or an Eero.
And
as it's better known in your world.
Yeah. I don't know what to call it anymore.
Yeah.
I do have hair.
Suffice to say, not necessarily the font of every blessing.
No. No. And not. I mean, I get it. I look different. And I'm aware of how that might be interpreted by people.
This guy has a weird bike, a weird haircut, and he's messing with our spigot.
Yeah, yeah. or just walking around.
And now he's hacking with his device. And,
yep.
Yeah. But you made it to the top eventually.
Well, yeah, so I decided not to call my brother because I was like, well, I'm already like 3/4 of the way up.
Yeah.
So I take this turn, still going a little bit further up, and I thought I was on the top. And I ended up taking a wrong turn, which then brought me back down, I would say, a third of the hill.
Oh, wow.
This horseshoe road.
Yeah, yeah.
And it took me back down. I ran back into Hillview again. I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, when you run into the road were trying to get away from, that's usually a problem.
Looks like I'm going back up.
Right, right.
But yeah, I did end up making it. What was originally slated as like an hour and 15-minute ride by Google ended up taking me 2 hours.
Mm.
And it was an hour and a half flight.
That reminds me.
From Portland to Missoula.
So the same time you were on the airplane was the time you were trying to navigate to your eventual destination by bike. Well, I respect you for getting there. How was your attitude and morale throughout the experience?
It was actually pretty good.
Oh,
I
good.
Think there was something to be said about like having done it on my own.
Yeah.
Having run into people at the airport as I'm like rolling my bike around, and they're like, "Are you gonna ride that out of the airport?"
Yeah. Fuck yes, I am.
I guess I am. And one guy said like, are you writing that to where you're staying? And I said, well, if my brother's not here.
Right.
And I, like, looked out. Guess he's not.
Guess he's not here. Gotta make good on your word.
Yeah.
Well, is that your first time bicycling in Missoula?
Yeah.
Because you've been there several times, but this is the first time you've taken a bike there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I would do it again in a heartbeat.
Nice. So how many states have you ridden a bike in now?
Three.
Okay.
Well, no. Let's count them.
Let's count them up.
Like California.
Okay.
Right. We'll count Oregon.
Oregon. If we have to.
Michigan.
Michigan. Washington.
Washington. Oh, yeah. I've been across that bridge.
Montana, we were just talking
Montana.
About.
Montana. So,
anything
yeah.
else?
I don't think so. Not
okay.
yet.
All right. Well, we got to build that. Build that resume. I don't know. I could not say with certainty how many I have been. It's a few more Western states.
Yeah.
But not that many more. I mean, add to that Wyoming, Idaho, Colorado. Never been to Utah on a bike. And I've ridden a bike in Boston, in Massachusetts.
I was almost certain.
And in Rhode Island.
Oh.
So
you got 10.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I was almost certain you were going to go into Utah or Nevada.
No, it'd be cool, except for they're like godforsaken places. And so, I don't know. They're just very dry. Okay. I know there are adventure cycling routes that go across. Maybe two adventure cycling, at least one.
Okay.
Like there's the, what do they call it? The middle or whatever. Is the California Zephyr. That's the Amtrak route, I think. So the, I'm going to speak from ignorance here, I guess, if I keep on going. As Ira Glass likes to say,
welcome. There's possibly a route that once followed a train.
Possibly. Yeah, I think they have similar names. Ira Glass calls it, this is an episode of American Jackass. you continue to expound with authority on something you know nothing about. So I'll stop. But yeah, anyways. Can I say it was incredibly amusing? First of all the episodes were great.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
I enjoyed hearing Tim Mooney.
Man.
And I didn't realize I had an intonation on my word choice.
Yeah.
Apparently, well, interesting.
Yeah, he really liked doing impressions of you.
I was unaware.
And I liked watching him or listening to him do impressions of you. I don't know if I've laughed more during, like, just the sit down process of making an episode.
I don't know if I've laughed more listening to one.
it was
pretty great.
Good. Yeah.
I was also drinking Four Loko on the shores of a river outside of Oak Ridge, Oregon, while we listened.
Okay.
So, yeah.
that probably helped. Well, like him and Delaney really played off each other really well, I thought.
I see something new in the works.
There you go.
I think there should be a Delaney episode of Pedal Shift someday.
Yeah. I'm surprised Delaney hasn't figured out, like, to do his own podcast yet.
Oh, no, he's been working on it.
Oh,
he's very meticulous.
Right.
I think he's working out the
kinks.
Yeah. So, yeah, someday there will be a thing. Yeah. So, anyways, there's that. I was just going to say about Car2Go, going back to that.
Yeah.
That I'm proud of you for joining, because I've always wondered for years, like, how you got along, honestly, without a car and only a bike. And maybe that's a weird thing for me to say. I don't know.
that seems a little surreal.
But yeah. I'm thinking of the convenience that option has brought to me since I've had it. And
yeah.
I think before that, it's kind of like life before smartphones or something. You know, like I remember life before smartphone, and I didn't know that I wanted one, and so I was very happy. And then I had one, and now that I've had one, I've had it ever since I had my first one. And if you said now, like, hey, go back to life without a smartphone, I'd be like, no, don't take it from me. I can't live without it. And honestly, I could, but it's such a convenience. So same thing with Car2Go. I have staved off the personal ownership of a car, I think largely due to this point-to-point rental thing.
Sure.
So I'm glad you have it. I think it'll ensure that you yourself don't need to buy your own vehicle.
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, it's up to you.
I mean,
and I'm not gonna look down my nose at you if you do. And I hope you don't if I do, because, I'll tell you more about that.
It depends on the car.
Yeah. What if it was Kit?
Okay, that'd be cool.
It's a Trans Am, right?
Yeah.
Welcome to the Sprocket Podcast.
It's also got to have that light in the front that goes back.
Oh, yeah. Well, without that, it's not Kit. It's just a Trans Am.
It's just a black Trans Am. Yeah.
Was it black?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Was it?
I thought it was silver.
No, it was black.
I'm thinking of the DeLorean from Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, that's the one I would buy if I could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would love a DeLorean.
Seriously, with a flux capacitor in the back? Even if it wasn't a real one, just to have one there?
Just to, like, have a prop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or a prop flux capacitor.
Totally. Did we iron out when the actual day from Back to the Future 2 is?
It was in July, wasn't it?
I thought it was September.
Gone.
I thought I put it on my calendar. I got to look it up. And again, like, if I use the internet to find that, the internet's going to tell me the wrong thing.
That's true.
I should go back and watch Back to the Future 2.
I'm still waiting for Mattel to come out with their hoverboard.
Yeah. Was there ever a DeLorean time machine from Mattel, like a Hot Wheels?
I don't know if Hot Wheels did. I know Micro Machines had a whole, like, Back to the Future movie set thing going on.
Well, in that case, there's no way that Mattel could have done it then.
Oh, because they're in conflict with each other.
I believe they were competitors.
Okay.
Yeah. That's at least part of the reason they were different sizes.
Okay. I had no idea. I thought Micro Machines, like, well, I guess it makes sense that they're in competition.
You know, I was also talking about Micro Machines to somebody the other day, and I was thinking that we grew up with the Micro Machines man at the end of the commercial saying all of those disclaimers and, like, prohibitions. Yeah, but, like, two octaves down.
Oh, yeah.
But we've grown accustomed to that sort of thing, so we've learned how to understand those sounds. And people who are older than us talk slower than us, not just because they're older, but because people used to talk slower.
Wait, so you're saying that micro machines have changed the way we talk to each other?
I think so.
Really?
I think so.
That's pretty interesting hypothesis.
Yeah, and so I'm not sure exactly if that ties into, if there's any application point, if there's any takeaway, I don't know if there is, but anyways, that was an interesting tidbit. Simpler living for the win, right? where were we going with this? Was there anything else? Did we wrap up your stories?
How
you went to Seattle?
I went to Seattle.
Yeah.
Yes.
You took the Bolt bus.
Yeah.
Is there any other?
This has been a really right.
The bus.
This has been a real multimodal vacation for me.
I'm proud of you.
You know, yeah, came back from Montana and had like half a day, and then. Like, came back on Wednesday, and then Thursday afternoon, took off on the Bolt bus.
Yeah.
Anna and I went to Seattle.
Nice.
Got an Airbnb.
That was a friend's wedding?
Yeah, friend's wedding.
Nice.
At this giant Catholic church.
Oh, really?
It was huge.
Was it super Catholic?
The wedding actually was not.
Okay. Was there Holy Communion?
There was not.
Okay.
Which I was relieved, because, like...
Good. It's a high-pressure situation.
It is.
Did I ever tell you about what happened with me when I tried to go to Holy Communion?
Did you try to sneak into Holy Communion?
I just got in the line.
Did someone pull you out of the line?
No.
Oh.
No, but I came from a different religious tradition growing up.
Uh-huh.
And so I took the wafer that the guy gave me, and I walked over to the dude with the glass.
Dipped it.
And I dipped it in. In religious terms, that's called intinction.
Right.
And they may have had to throw out the wine and get new wine that was blessed by a priest. I'm not sure.
For real?
I think so. I may have violated a very sacred... Yeah. So anyways, that's the only time I ever tried.
That's that hilarious. Yeah. You desecrated the holy wine.
I wasn't trying to, but, you know, if you don't know the rules, you don't know the rules. So.
I got pulled out of a line once.
Once a sinner, always a sinner. Yeah.
Well, like, so in Catholic tradition,
yeah,
you have to be Catholic.
Yes.
To receive Holy Communion.
And you know how they tell. It's when you do it wrong.
Oh, yeah. When you desecrate the wine, apparently. I don't know. Well, yeah. Granted, it was like...
In my defense, it was near Easter.
It was a family member of my godparents,
okay,
that pulled me out of the line.
Oh,
so
really?
They already
okay.
knew I wasn't Catholic.
So not the clergy or whatever.
No.
Okay.
It was like, son, you like, can't
we
do
can
this.
Spot you from a mile away.
But I thought I was a little offended, though, in all honesty, because I was like, who are you to tell me whether or not I can take?
Aren't we all brothers and sisters here in this world?
Come on, we're all on the same team.
But the obvious answer is no, we're not.
No, apparently.
Anyways, so you went to a wedding,
and there was no communion.
Okay,
and it was in this giant Catholic church, and there was like maybe 50 people in attendance. It was
really?
Small wedding.
Oh.
I don't know, like, whether, like, they especially wanted that site,
yeah,
or, yeah, I should ask Sarah these questions.
Did you bicycle to the wedding?
We car to goad.
Okay.
No, sorry. We bicycled from our Airbnb to the wedding, but we had to get back to the Airbnb from downtown, and that's when we car to goad.
Okay, gotcha. So I want to, just a quick, tips for people who want to look good at a wedding, because this is a dress-up event, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Yeah. I was in a tie and vest. And
what do you do? Nice Don't you
pants.
Get all sweaty?
Yeah, you sweat. I mean...
Do you like my devil's advocate voice?
Yeah. First off, it's summer, and it was like 90 degrees in Seattle. I challenge anybody there to not sweat.
So everybody was sweating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know... I mean, I wasn't wearing any makeup or anything, so there wasn't that barrier.
Didn't have to worry about it running or whatever.
Right.
Okay.
Right. But I don't know. Part of me is just like, if I sweat, I sweat.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm going to be like wet, so what?
Well, it's the advantage of your color choice in clothing.
That's
is that,
true.
Like, it's
like
harder
most
to tell.
Don't notice.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. I might have to like bring this to Anna and when. You know, how she felt about it.
But we would be interested in her feedback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
You should have her call the listener line.
I'll
503-847-9774.
Anyone else who's done, like, dress-up events.
Seriously. Call us. We would like to put your voice on, honestly, because, like, you hear enough of our voices. Like, if you text, that's just going to be us reading it. But if you call, That's your voice.
That's your voice.
And if you don't have a phone, you can email us a wave or whatever.
That would be cool, too.
Yeah, yeah. Do it any old way.
Record it on your, like, MIDI sound thing.
Yeah,
whatever.
Actually, bonus points if someone records it on their tape deck and then mails the tape to us.
There you go.
At 1001.
I will mail you something good.
Southeast Division Street, care of the IPRC, Portland, Oregon, 97202. You know, the great thing about podcasting is there's no need to repeat information.
That's true. Because
if people miss it, they can rewind it.
They can just, you know, there's that 10 seconds or 15
Although,
seconds back.
Sometimes people are not able to conveniently, so I'll say it again. SprocketPodcast.com/Brockdata/Aaron Flores. Care of IPRC, 1001 Southeast Division Street.
Portland, Oregon.
97202. There we go. We solved that problem. So, I do want to hear about, you met someone famous.
Well, let me clarify, because I didn't meet them.
Oh, really?
I just benefited from others meeting
him. So you never met the person in person?
No, I did not.
Okay.
I did not.
Well, who was this person?
So Rivers Cuomo of Weezer.
Came
into
the band, the rock band.
Yes.
With the glasses.
You might know them from such hits as Hashpipe. I might know them from such hits as Buddy Holly.
And I know them from
Beverly Hills.
Right.
That's where I want to be.
We were
living
late.
Living in Beverly Hills.
Yeah. We were late to the show, and that was like the first song I heard.
Are you serious? With the wah solo, it's like.
Yeah. That's a talk box.
Oh, it is.
It's a talk box.
Which is different than a wah solo. Hashtag guitar nerds. But yes.
Yeah.
So the thing I was most surprised by when you sent me the message saying, hey, I'm going to see Weezer, is that I assumed it would be followed with, and I'm going to make fun of them.
Oh.
Yeah. But apparently you're a fan of old Weezer.
I'm a fan. Their first two albums are great.
Yeah. What was their first album called?
The first album was just Weezer.
Okay. And the second one?
Pinkerton.
Pinkerton was the second. Yeah. Okay.
And that was the one, like, when it came out, and I'll admit I fell prey to this too, when it came out. Like, everyone was like, oh, that doesn't sound like their first album.
It was a watershed moment. Sophomore albums are hard to pull off.
Yeah.
Yeah. With the exception of the band Semisonic, whom I love, their second album was great. But, Weezer, you enjoyed the show.
Yeah. No, it was great.
Just help me figure out, why would I assume that you would hate Weezer? Because I feel like maybe it was the Beverly Hills single.
Well, I hate that song.
Okay. What about Pork and Beans?
I'm not a huge fan.
Okay.
I'm,
like the newer, like it gets
anything,
the less.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I was going to say anything after Maladroit, like I either don't know or probably don't like.
Okay. So in that sense, was it a fulfilling concert experience?
Did they play the thing?
Did they play all the hits?
They played a lot of the ones that I liked, and some of the ones that I didn't know, I still liked. And, you know, so they did the whole Beverly Hills thing.
Uh-huh.
And that was like the one song I hoped I would miss and like got all of it in all of its glory.
Yeah.
And I still had fun.
Right.
Because live music is fucking great.
Yes, it is. And you would argue that's the only way to hear it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
not just live music, but all music.
Yeah. Music should be an experience. And
what
if
you make it one? What if you have the recording and then you make it into an experience?
How so?
With beer? I mean, some of my best memories about listening to music have been when I'm drinking and hanging out with a person and talking about, this is why I like this song.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like when you and I, like, we'll do a listening party or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, sure.
So in that case,
but
it's okay to have recorded music?
Well, I mean, that's
But I shouldn't
our
listen to
choice.
It alone in my headphones.
No.
Okay.
Music historically has been, and musicologists or ethnomusicologists will probably correct me on this, but my understanding is musically has originally and historically been a communal experience.
Yeah.
An experience for and by the community. And just about any creative endeavor is like that.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, you might have the one guy who can play guitar in your little clan or tribe or whatever, or who has like learned to like, you know, stretch skins and
make drums,
make a drum out of that or like,
you or know, make banjos.
Yeah. Or
anything else with stretched skin.
But anyways, it's been collaborative within the community as well. But it's always been an experience. It's always been like people coming together and experiencing this, if not all making, all at least participating in some way.
Right.
And, you know, recorded music is great in that, like, I would have never heard, you know, much of the music that I listen to because, because it's been recorded and
because
transported.
Because Tom Waits does not live in your bedroom.
Right, exactly, exactly. Tom Waits is not part of my community.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in the meantime, like, I think there's a little bit of sacrifice that we're or a little bit of something that we're missing mm-hmm. when we depend on recorded music as our central experience.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Have you been listening to the River Signal?
No.
Oh, that's okay.
I'm sorry.
That's all good. Amazing
episode.
All episodes.
Apologies to Brian Benson.
I'm just catching up with all of those, but one of the first couple episodes they had like the Lumpy Jug Dumpers or something like that. Uh-huh. There was some band that was talking about cuz they're on their riverboat going down the Mississippi and interviewing people along the way. And this band, one of the guys was talking about how the experience of music is different and old-timey music as we think of it, not necessarily super old-timey. Because we were getting like a filtered and edited version that's like,
sure.
These were the good old days, as opposed to the ones that were about booze and sex and whatever else that, you know,
we
mama didn't allow.
Version.
Yeah, yeah. And so this band was kind of working at getting at some of the like actually authentic old timey music and talking about the same things you were just mentioning about how like basically for, you know, hundreds of years, people could go an entire lifetime and only hear music in like the way
from
their family
like 100
or clan
mile
did it. Yeah.
Or their 5 mile radius.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, well, and that's why like in the early days of jazz, you've got New Orleans jazz that sounds starkly different than like New York or Chicago jazz.
Sure.
And then although they like shared some roots in common,
right,
there was still at least enough of a isolation to where they all like had their different color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas like punk rock is punk rock and like there's variations, but there's a certain set of stylistic rules or norms that will follow and to the listener will say like, okay, that's punk rock.
Yeah.
And there was a time where some of that isolation still played in, like the punk rock you used to hear like in DC in the '80s was very different than the stuff you would hear in LA in the '80s.
And even then there was less bleed over than there is today where basically everything's kind of washed together.
Yeah. That's the thing.
And I'm not going to say, cause I'm a big fan of Katy Perry's song Wide Awake. I'm not a huge fan of Katy Perry in general, but that's a great song.
But
the distinction being, I don't think the entire world should sound like Katy Perry. So we have to make sure, as technology allows us to spread all these musical influences, that we don't just water everything down into one like cultural pulp of grossness.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that's I don't know. That's generally what I rail against when I talk about how like recorded music is like, you know, ruining the experience.
EDM is the apocalypse.
Yep.
So Weezer puts on a good show.
They did.
Nice.
They did. It was
and
a good show. So
Rivers Cuomo.
So how this all came about,
we took the long way around to this one.
We certainly did. is that Rivers came into Clever Cycles and rented a Brompton and apparently rode it all around Portland.
Nice. He seems like the kind of guy that would do that.
Well, apparently this is something he did or does.
Is he the
like
new David Byrne?
When he rolls, he's like David Byrne Jr., I think. I think
he's a hipper, younger, cooler David Byrne.
He's going to take the reins when David Byrne, like, you know, can't bicycle anymore.
True.
But yeah,
but in case anybody didn't know, David Byrne famously does not own a car.
Does not own a car. Yeah. Has not owned a car, as far as the way I understand it.
Yep, and good on him. Yeah.
While he's touring, we kind of like looked at his Twitter feed and it's like, basically, like, I'm in this city and I went to this bike shop and I rented this bike and I rolled around here. And then, like, you know, now I'm in this city and I went to this bike shop and I rolled around here.
Are they like my tweets where they're all in caps?
Not exactly.
I am in Portland.
No, but it just seems like that's what he does while he's touring, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, that's great.
Incidentally, so he was in Clever Cycles, and he
Clever
rents,
Cycles, a shop on Southeast Hawthorne in
Ninth,
Portland, Oregon.
Ninth and Hawthorne.
Yes.
Yes. If you want a Brompton, rent it there.
That's your place.
Mainly because I don't know of any other place that rents Bromptons.
True. Yeah. It is the one-stop shop.
Yes.
For Brompton rentals in Portland.
Anyway.
Did Rivers go to Voodoo Donut on his Brompton?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm going to have to, like,
did
check
his
Twitter
again. Did he go to Pine State Biscuits?
I don't see him as a Pine State Biscuits guy.
Did he go to any other places that we're tired of?
I think he went up the new division.
Can we talk about
that? No, I'm just kidding.
Okay.
The only place I know in specific was Alberta Street.
Okay.
That was mentioned.
Gotcha.
He probably went to Pine State Biscuits.
I bet he went to... I can't even think of anything on Alberta that I, yeah. I like.
The Screen Door.
Yeah. He went. I bet he went to the Screen Door. Anyways.
I was thinking about Rivers Cuomo going around Portland, and like, I feel like he would be one of the celebrities that would be most likely to blend in with everybody else
in
Portland.
Well, and that's the thing, is he doesn't look anything like I remember how he looked.
Oh, okay.
Like, when we saw them, stage, I was like, well, no wonder. Oh, yeah. And so he's in at Clever Cycles, and nobody knew who he was
at
the time.
Did he have a mustache?
He had a full-on beard.
Full beard.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I got to the show, and I'm like, well, no wonder none of you knew who he was.
Yeah.
He doesn't look like
Buddy Holly anymore.
Right? Nope.
Wait, did he ever wear glasses?
Yeah.
Because all the other guys in the band wore glasses, right?
Yeah.
Or, I don't know.
I think only the guitarist did not.
Oh, okay.
But everybody else did at one
point. I just remember going to see them last time. I don't know if it was last time. Like, a couple of years ago, they were in town. I went to see them, and we were way up in the nosebleeds, and right next to us were two dudes with, like, the Buddy Holly glasses.
Hilarious.
And, like, you know, basically the way Weezer looked in the 90s.
By the way, I danced the fuck out of that song.
That's what you said. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Good
sang
for
the
you.
Whole, sang along to the whole thing.
Did you sing in your Tom Waits voice?
No.
Really?
No. I tried my best to, like,
so you can sing in other voices.
It takes a little bit more effort, yes.
Yeah. Nice. I'm glad. That's great.
No, it was fun.
Yeah.
It was a fun time.
You said that's the first time you've been to see live music in some time.
Oh, gosh. At least the last show I saw, yeah, it was like about a year ago.
Last time
you were
like trying to separate two people fighting at a Hillstop concert?
No. I've at least been to two other concerts since
then. Okay.
Yeah.
Can we call them concerts? Does that make us old? I don't even know.
I don't know. I've started calling, like, rappers rap singers.
Rap singers, yes. Yes, they're singing their rap songs. Yeah. So, anyways. Yeah, well, congratulations. I'm glad you got to see Weezer.
Yeah.
I'm glad Rivers came through. I wish we could have had him on tonight. But
yeah, he had such a
understand.
Good experience. He, like, had his management call in and
send,
like, Clever Cycles.
Oh, good
like,
for
two
that.
Will call tickets. Oh, yeah. I want to talk about the Will call tickets, though.
Okay.
Because that was an adventure.
What happened?
They were under someone else's name. And we we knew it was under this guy's name, one of the owners, I'm not going to mention.
And you're like, I'm with the band.
It was kind of like that. It's like, no, really. That's who I'm with.
No, seriously. They said I could show up.
Yeah. He tried to call. I swear he tried to call and no one answered.
Yeah.
Well, what number did he call? I don't know. He just called this number.
Right.
And, like, both Anna and I are explaining. And, like, you know, I understand these people are probably unpaid interns. And if they do it wrong, like, they don't get their college credit. And
But I think,
and,
I,
you know, whatever.
But it might even be less than that. I think worse to have a minimum wage job than an internship?
I don't
know. Like, not categorically. Not like a values judgment. Just like.
Right.
I feel like the experience of a minimum wage job checking tickets is worse than an internship checking tickets.
Sure. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to roll that one over.
Well,
but yeah, there was like four people working on this at one point with us.
You must have felt very special.
and at one point they're just like, I don't know, give them two general admission tickets. There. And they printed them out and gave them to us, right?
Oh, there you go.
And that was cool. And, you know, hey, I didn't have to pay for tickets.
Yeah.
But the whole time... That during that whole process of like from getting the tickets to like getting into the show, I was like, what are we missing?
Right.
What else could we have gotten?
Everything from
Pinkerton. There was like several people with like bubble machines. Could I have gotten a bubble machine?
Ooh.
You know?
You mean like bubble machines like to make bubbles while you're at the show?
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Did we get the special tickets and like they just couldn't figure that out for us?
That's a good question.
With special bubble machine.
Well, we don't hold it against Rivers, that's for sure.
No, not at all.
No.
No.
We'll welcome him into our studio anytime.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Come talk to us about biking in Portland.
Yeah. You had a good interview with Mark Maron, I think.
Yeah. I wanted to listen to that interview before the show. I just couldn't get it.
Yeah. Well, listen to it now.
Right now?
No, well, I mean, just like, I mean, due to the nature of editing, we could just stop the show for a moment.
Click, click, click.
Let's just assume you've done that now.
Okay.
Okay. So how was that interview?
It was great. It was fantastic. Very interesting.
Yeah. So
I did not know that thing about Ripper.
Seriously. About that, yeah, that thing about how he writes songs?
Yeah.
Didn't know that. So.
So, like, people have heard a lot about your adventures.
Yes.
Just because you and Adele have been so kind to record your dispatches to us. But, yeah, what else have you been up to in this intervening time?
Yeah. So I went to Salem, and Salem is not the place that most people end their bike tours.
No.
Which is why whenever somebody asked me where I was going, I'd always say Portland because it made more sense.
Okay.
Than, like, Salem.
Are you saying, like, when someone on your bike tour was asking you where?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Like, we have big old loaded up bikes, and they're right. Like, where are you going? Yeah. So, anyways, Salem is where I ended. I had professional development courses for a week. And
do you feel you have developed professionally?
I believe that I have. I have a certificate that says so.
That's all that matters.
So that's important. Yeah, I was teaching people, or I was learning how to teach people stuff about school buses.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm becoming more and more important at work.
Wow.
To the point where I'm working in the summer. I was at work today.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But more importantly, well, more fun than that, Mountain Bike Oregon was this weekend.
Yes.
Which is an event that happens twice a summer in Oak Ridge, Oregon, which is the center of recreation in Oregon.
And I don't remember you telling me that you were volunteering. Was this like a spur of the moment thing, or
I got an email from Aileen because Aileen Crotty of Film by Bike
and
other
many
things.
Other things.
Yeah, she kind of has this dream team that she has coordinated to get volunteers to make this event happen. And it's kind of I'm not going to say it's a shoestring budget sort of thing, but just like any other event, like a lot of people want to be there. Not everybody can. So they keep the costs down by recruiting volunteers to help for stuff. And that means that all the people that want to go ride mountain bikes around Oak Ridge can do so.
Yeah.
And all the people who can't afford the event can volunteer and go anyways.
And still ride.
Yeah. So that was me. It's a super cool event. It's been going for about 11 years now or something, I think.
Really?
And Oak Ridge is another one of those, like, mountain logging towns that's kind of shut down a little bit, and it's just the slightest bit. Like, it had a dip after the logging industry subsided.
Yes.
And then they kind of reinvented themselves and became this outdoor recreation town. So there's far less logging happening in those woods than there used to be, but there are a ton of logging roads and a ton of trails that people hike and run and mountain bike on. So mountain biking, not a thing that I am very good at.
I'm looking at your leg and the number of bandages you have on your arm.
Yes. Well, I will say that one of these bandages showed up just today when I was sitting in a park eating my lunch, and a loose dog ran over to me and smacked its face into my arm and made me bleed.
Didn't try to bite you.
Did
or
not
anything.
Bite
just,
me.
Just
it was
ran
just
into
so
you.
Excited that I was there. I was like putting out an arm to kind of keep it at bay, and it swung its head into me because it was so excited to see me. And so it did not bite me, but it cut me with its tooth.
Oh,
so
wow.
The rest of the injuries on my legs and arms that you can see, and I'll post a picture soon to the internet. I have a picture of me with all of my wounds the day they happened. But first, let me set up that at Mountain Bike Oregon, there are different routes people can choose. Everyone has either their own mountain bikes or they're borrowing demo mountain bikes from all the manufacturers that are there, all the vendors that show up to demo their products. So I got a Niner bike.
Ooh.
And speaking of which, as I'm thinking about Niner, I had some gifts for you, so let me give those to you real quick.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, no, that's when I go out of town.
I didn't get
I bring things back. No, it's okay.
It was like your birthday yesterday, too. No, a couple days ago.
No. So first off, because our tour took us to places that we had been, I brought you a memento. Can I toss this to you?
Sure.
Oh, there we go.
Maybe you can't.
Yeah, not really.
Well, you can toss it. I just can't. Oh, fucking Diamond Lake.
So I brought you a keychain from Diamond Lake, which is where you were eaten by mosquitoes alive.
Yes.
Right before we climbed up to Crater Lake back in 2011.
Where, like, I couldn't get to my my mosquito repellent, so
because
I used,
of the bugs.
Tea tree oil.
Yeah. Did it work?
Not especially.
Okay.
It would work for, like, a little while, but
yeah.
Unlike mosquito repellent, this was not sweat-proof.
Right, right. I was surprised by how many places we went on this tour that you had been with us on that trip. And I feel bad. Again, I'll put this apology out to you and everybody else, including the Rust family, whose children we ferried around. There was a paved route over those mountains. I should have known that.
Whoops.
My mistake.
So it goes.
Yeah. So anyways.
I still would not trade that experience for anything.
I'm glad. And that's why I brought you a keychain from Diamond Lake.
Right on.
The second one is from Niner Bikes.
Uh-huh.
And I'll kind of flip that over your direction. It reminded me of you. I just thought that this is the sort of thing that you would appreciate, the sort of thing you should have.
Damn. Yeah.
It's a black.
I'm going to put this on my on my handlebar bag.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's actually. So that's a slogan. And I'll tell you what it is. It's a black patch with the slogan, pedal, damn it. And that's the Niner Bikes slogan.
That's okay.
And they have that on their top tube right next to the handlebar where the handlebars come together into the body.
Okay.
They have that on the top of the top tube so that when you're like leaning against your handlebars and kind of like really like worn out from the ride and you're like, oh, right. I can't take anymore. Down there on the bike, it says pedal, damn it. So,
there you go.
Yeah. So Niner Bikes, they
I
let
like
me
this.
One. They let me one for my demo ride. So unbeknownst to me, While I was out in Salem developing professionally, Adele had already started her volunteer work at Mountain Bike Oregon, and uh-huh. So the volunteers get to go out on a ride once they've done all their volunteer work and shifts and whatnot. And so Adele signed up for the Alpine course, which happens to be one of the harder courses.
Signed like you both up for this? Or
she
just
signed up
herself?
For herself for one day.
Okay.
And then because my volunteer shift got done at 10 a.m., all the shuttles and things, there's buses that take you up to the top of ridges
uh-huh.
so you can get to the access point to the top of these trails. And the only one left over was Alpine.
Oh.
And it turns out, just like on a downhill ski slope, you have like the Black Diamond courses.
Yes.
And then there are others that are easier. Alpine is basically the mountain biking equivalent of a Black Diamond course.
Okay.
Not like necessarily quite that intense, but super technical. It's a lot of like downhill riding, which on a paved, like on a road bike, on a road is fun.
Yes.
Because you're just like feeling the breeze. But on a mountain bike.
On a mountain bike, I can imagine it's also fun, but.
It is if you know what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you've got only like, you know, a single track, basically like, you know, the width of your body. You're riding on this surface, and even with a bicycle with, like, you know, soft tires and knobby tires and suspension, there's only so much room for you to go. And I am not familiar. I am not skilled in the ways of mountain biking. And so I did the rookie mistake, I think, is to lock up the brakes on the front wheel.
Oh, yeah.
And as anyone knows, especially without, like, I've been used to a loaded touring bike for the past 3 or 4 weeks. And as anybody knows, if you lock up your front wheel on a standard bicycle, disc brakes, heavy rider, light bike, I went right over the front.
Oh, mother.
Several times. And so every time this happened, I was trying to pull my way out of, just about every time, I was trying to pull my way out of a switchback. So okay. Just like when you're hiking in the mountains, you hike up a switchback, it just goes bzz, 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 all the way up. All the way down, there are these switchbacks. So you got to like ride down one length of trail and then... turn around the switchback, ride down the next length.
Sure.
And the pro guys can do it, like, really fast.
Yeah,
and
they,
the trick
like,
is,
skid their back wheel
you
over.
You know exactly how this works.
Yeah.
Yeah, you skid the back wheel, let the front wheel travel so that nothing bad happens, and just enjoy the flow. I am not a man who has flow. Not at all. Not in
no.
the least. So I met a nice guy from Seattle named Tyson, and I don't know, I was going to give him a sticker, but I did not give him one, so I don't know if he'll remember to tune into the show sometime or not. But Tyson, if you're listening, it was great to meet you, and I'm sorry I didn't get to say goodbye. But he was there for one of my spills, and he was able to help me kind of patch up and bandage my elbow, and I had a bunch of scrapes, but I had one really deep gash on my elbow. So, yeah. The problem with mountain biking is that, like, it's not over till it's over. Like there's
right,
no,
like you're at the top. You gotta make it to the bottom.
It's just a trail through the woods, and so I was thinking, like, you know, I should be having the time of my life. Even, you know, granted, I had a spill. I didn't break anything. I should be fine, right?
Right.
But my mental state, like halfway through the ride, cause it's like a 16-mile ride on this, you know, single track paved trail, probably out for 3.5 hours or something like that. I was shocked at how difficult it seemed to pedal up hills. But they're steep hills, so there's that.
Yeah.
And then I was shocked at how difficult it was to go down hills, because that's also tough. Yeah.
What was the hardest part about coming down?
I think the tension, just because I'd never done it before.
Okay.
And I basically jumped into the deep end of the pool. It was
right,
like,
right.
This is my only chance to do this, so I'll just do whatever I can do. And I had considered not going. I considered, like, maybe I'll just hang around the camp. You know, Mountain Bike Oregon, there's still free beer at the beer garden for when I'm done with my volunteer shift, so I could just do that.
Sure.
But it seemed like a waste to go up there and not mountain bike, right? So, Yeah. Anyways.
So how did Adele's experience differ from yours?
Well, she fell a lot, too.
Oh.
But the difference between me and her is that I'm a huge dude that looks like he should know what he's doing. And she's a pretty girl. So I think she was charming, whereas I think I was just, I probably fatigued the guides.
Oh,
like
there
were two guides at the end of the whole pack, and there was probably like, you know, 40 people on this ride or something like that.
They were like the, what do you call that, at the end of the ride?
Yes, they were the sweeps.
The sweeps.
Exactly. We had a ride leader, we had people who were going up ahead, and then we had sweeps who made sure that nobody got left behind, which was very nice of them because I would have gotten left behind.
It's one of the most frustrating parts about being the sweep is like you have to go as slow as the slowest person.
If it's a no drop ride.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So it was very cool. The scenery around Oak Ridge, especially on that Alpine Trail, is amazing.
Yeah.
Really, really beautiful. But the problem was, again, because it was such a long ride, about halfway through the ride, 8 miles in, I started feeling like, oh, I'm tired.
Oh, no.
I really feel like I need to toss it in or take a break or something. But I felt the pressure because everybody else was ahead of me. I felt the pressure that, like, these guys don't want to just sit here and hang out with me, you know?
Sure.
They'd rather probably that I keep going. Even though the guide said, like, you know, no hurry, take your time. They're still, like, when someone's behind you, they don't pass you. Their job is not to pass you.
Yeah.
There's a certain amount of pressure built into that. So for the last, like, at least for the last third of it, I was just like, come on, damn it, where are you? And come on, show up. And there's a covered bridge down in Westford right outside of Oak Ridge. It's this beautiful covered bridge. And I knew that, like, once I could see that, like, down the side of the hill in the valley, just, like, once I saw something I recognized, I'd be like, come on, it's the end. Come on, get closer. Right. Damn it, where are you? And I couldn't find it.
Oh.
So, like, it was a lot of that time of just thinking, like, this is no longer fun, but I still have to do the work.
Right, right.
So listen to me complain. I'm a guy that got to go mountain
biking. But you didn't end up throwing in the towel either.
No, it really wasn't an option.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
And by the time I was done, like, I actually felt, you know, there was a lot of pressure. I had a brand new pair of bike gloves that were still a bit tight because they hadn't quite stretched out yet, you know. They were the right size, but I think they were just a little snug. So I hadn't broken those in, and so my hands were a bit sore. And my elbow was sore from having fallen, although now I can, like, curl my arm up again without pain.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, and I was, like, covered in dirt and blood and all that stuff. So this is the glory that people who go mountain biking kind of live for, except they get those wounds, the same wounds, but they get them with better stories.
Sure.
I just have to say I was a noob and I fell off my bike a lot. The nice thing was I found out that just like when I ran into that little girl on the American River Trail down in Sacramento, I think that when I fall, I roll. And again, that little girl's okay.
That's good to know.
She's not hurt.
Right.
Everything worked out okay. but yeah, I think I'm good at falling. And I guess if I could be good at anything, that's probably a good thing to be good at.
Because
if I fall, I want to know that I'm going to be okay.
Well, and as a big dude, like when you fall, it probably impacts your body a lot more than it would myself. Or
I mean, yeah. So if I do fall, I feel like it's my responsibility to kind of roll with it and kind of get into it. And
Yeah.
The last fall wasn't so bad. It was kind of this spongy, like, limb and underbrush and grass. And I was always afraid that I was going to fall off the bike and then keep on tumbling down the hillside, you know, like, because there were some pretty steep places. And
Yeah. And I'm assuming you wore a helmet.
I did wear a helmet.
Yeah.
I believe that was mandated.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's
one of those things where, like,
I wouldn't protest that. This is in fact a high risk sport. Not like bicycling around town. That's not such a high risk sport generally. But bicycling in the woods on a mountain bike, on an unfamiliar bike in unfamiliar territory.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it's a technical ride.
Very technical.
Even the, like, quote-unquote pros are wearing helmets.
For sure.
Pros. Like, there's things that you just can't predict on that trail.
Yeah. So my thought was that I would like to do it again, but we'll see how it goes. I still have interesting questions in my head about, like, the ethics of mountain biking because I like the idea.
You mean
of it.
Like its environmental impact?
Well, not the fact that, like, bikes tear up the trails so much because I don't think that's really necessarily a problem.
Uh-huh.
And everyone says, like, anyone who knows their stuff doesn't go out riding in mud because mud tears up the trails when you ride on it and it's dangerous. And, you go out mountain biking when it's dry. So you don't damage the trails and the environment and everything. But more about just like if I want to go mountain biking, I have to drive a car out there. So there's a lot of like emissions and that sort of thing. It could be, I'm not saying someone else is selfish. I would say I would feel personally selfish for renting a car and driving into the woods just to ride my bike on dirt.
Yeah.
which is why I like Mountain Bike Oregon, because it's like, instead of a bunch of people all driving their cars into the woods, it's like everybody drives their cars to Oak Ridge,
thing going,
and then they use buses to get up there, or shuttles or whatever. But yeah, it's just the whole, like, I don't know. I'm still of the mind that I would like not to own a car, and I would like to have pastimes that don't require it. So it's kind of like water skiing. Like, I like water skiing, but I wouldn't buy a boat because I feel like that's also kind of a selfish use of resources. And I'm not in love enough with water skiing to say, like, I'm either going to burn all this fuel and do it myself, or I'm going to find a way to water ski that doesn't require. Yeah. The thing about downhill skiing, you can do that, like, by hiking up to a mountain and then skiing down.
That's true.
But you can't water ski by, like, swimming faster across something. I don't think. So, yeah, these are the ethical questions I have around mountain biking, and I'm not making any value judgments on anybody. Everybody I met this weekend was very great.
It sounds more or less like it's your own personal, like, quandary.
It's my own, how do I operate and what do I do? How do I make my decisions? And right. I would like for there to be a way to mountain bike without having to, like, burn a bunch of gas every time I wanted to do
it. Right, and so, it's not like you could, I don't know, ride the mountain bike to the mountain bike area.
See, that's the thing. I think you could, especially if you have, like, the 9er bike that I rode.
Uh-huh.
Very comfortable, and, you know, just standard size tires. It wasn't fat bike tires or anything like that. I feel like you could stick that onto a bus pretty well. And if you're lucky enough, I forget, there's a shuttle that goes from Eugene to Oak Ridge. So if you have the time and you could bolt bus to Eugene, you could also take a bike up to Oak Ridge. You could probably find a place to camp up there. You could ride into the woods. You could do your own ride if you wanted to. Ah. Like, the option is there.
Yeah.
I don't know if that shuttle to Oak Ridge runs on weekends or not. I thought that it did. However, LTD out of, it's the bus in Eugene.
Uh-huh.
They also run up Highway 126. So there are many ways to get to the woods from Eugene.
You could possibly make it out there. Yeah.
Yeah. It was also interesting to see how many people, the Disciples of Dirt, are from Eugene.
Uh-huh.
And just a huge mountain biking culture. Like, most of the people at the event this weekend were Eugene people. So it's interesting. It's kind of a cultural shift.
Any Portland people?
There were a few, but, like, no one I knew.
Yeah.
And this is a question that Adele and I were turning over. It's like the whole mountain biking thing. I feel like, and maybe I'm making some of this up, but I feel like the people who ride mountain bikes in Portland might feel somewhat of a stigma from people who are like, bikes only, no cars, just bikes.
Right.
And there's not a whole lot of flow between the two groups, you know? Or, yeah.
Well, yeah. It's been a thing for a while.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there would be people talking about access in town.
And yeah.
Because there is no access in town here.
No.
Yeah. So they're good questions. I don't have answers. I'm just mentioning the questions because they're compelling to me. And I think that, like, the bicycle is a cool enough thing that I would like to use it for more things. I would love to go in the woods on bikes. But I might need to be sponsored by someone. So who knows? But, yeah. But then there's also the thing, like, there's a ton of people who ride both road bikes and mountain bikes, like bikes of all kinds, that don't have the quandary of, like, oh, should I use a car or not? Some people just don't ask the question and just go for it.
Sure.
And in a way, I'm jealous about that. But it's also, like, you know, because I have this commitment to a simpler life or a simplicity of life, that I don't want to depend too much on fossil fuels.
It's one of those things that, like, once you're aware of it,
yeah,
and you've got this choice. You know, and I'm not saying, like, one is good or one is bad, but you've got a choice.
Right.
To whether or not to say, like, okay, I'm aware of, like, these issues, environmental, financial, whatever, and I'm going to continue on regardless, and I'm going to figure out how to reconcile that within myself. Or I'm aware of these issues, and I can't reconcile that in whatever way, you know, either financially, morally, ethically, whatever.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, I got to go another direction. You know, it's like finding out where sausage is made.
Oh, true.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, well, now I know that that's made of those things.
Yeah. But then there's the other side of that is that, like, I know what sausage is made of.
And it's fucking delicious.
And I really enjoy sausage.
See,
so it's
right,
like, what
but
do
that's
I do
the
with
choice,
that?
Yeah. That's the choice you make. It's like, well, I like the taste of it. And so, so there,
right.
You know,
here's the thing. I feel like my initial take on mountain biking is that it is a thing that is best shared. Just like, you could buy, like, a 12 pack of Pabst, say, or anything else and drink it all yourself.
Sure.
But not necessarily a great experience, not a thing you should do all the time. There is an occasional time where maybe you do want to drink a whole brick of Pabst all by yourself. And I'm not saying you shouldn't. I'm just saying it might not be a good thing to do all the time.
I might say you should.
If you're going to get a brick of Pabst, share it with somebody. Right, Delaney? So, he and I had a fantastic night over a cube of Pabst.
The
thing about mountain biking is that it's like, you might go out every now and again on your own and just ride in the woods because it seems like a good thing to do. And you go out and you drive and you do it, and it's cool. But generally, I feel like that's one of those things where take some people along, you know? If you're going to do something, share it with somebody.
Definitely.
If you're gonna drive your truck somewhere, make it a big truck where they can hold like 6 bikes and a crew cab and get all your friends in there and go out and ride in the woods together.
Well, you can't water ski by yourself.
That's true.
You need at least one other person.
That is true.
Actually, two. You need a driver and a spotter.
Right, right. And if you're trying to water ski without any fossil fuels at all, you probably need to find like a towpath like along the Erie Canal or something and get like a team of bicyclists to tow you on water skis.
Just like the old days.
I wonder if that's ever been done.
I don't know.
It would be, yeah. Tim Mooney's on the Erie Canal, or was, like, just a couple days ago.
Oh, yeah?
I haven't listened to any of his tour journals yet, but yeah. So, anyways, hey, how's our time? We're probably way over.
We're at 1:13 right
now.
Wow.
All right. You want to do news real quick?
We could.
Make it a 1.5-er?
Sure.
All right. Well, you know, the thing is, if it's just you and I talking.
Yeah.
Anybody who's made it this far wants to hear the news.
Wants to hear the news.
Anybody who doesn't make it this far doesn't care.
So. I think anybody who's made it this far actually wants to hear their name.
That's true. Maybe that's the most important part.
All right.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
Just a quick note here.
Yes.
Just a quicker note is what I was hoping for.
There we go.
And probably didn't come through anyways. I just opened my second beer. I meant to do it when I started talking about Oregon and mountain biking because this is the Oregon beer, the Pine Drops IPA from Deschutes Brewery. Thank you, the beer mongers.
Brock opened a second beer.
That's right. That's our news.
Good night, folks.
Brush your teeth.
First up from MomentumMag.com. Are you familiar with these people?
They had a brief period of time where they rebranded as Mo.
Oh, really?
And they came back as Momentum.
Oh, I'm so glad they came back as Momentum.
Yeah, yeah.
Can bike lanes connect divided communities? A new report examines the role bike lanes play in creating racial, social, and economic equity. What do bike lanes, racial equity, and economic equity all have in common? According to a new report by People for Bikes, quite a lot. Through discussions with advocates from minority communities, along with some serious data crunching, People for Bikes has produced a report that suggests that inequities in the distribution of bike resources actually serve to exacerbate many of the issues facing low-income and minority communities in the U.S., and offers some insights on how bike equity could contribute to overall social equity, both in the U.S. and abroad. In large part due to these disparities, Hispanic riders make up 28% of those killed while cycling in the U.S., with African-American riders making up 23%, while non-Hispanic white riders and Asian riders account for 18% and 13%, respectively. The lack of safe cycling infrastructure is sorely felt. Of the 16,193 Americans surveyed for the report, 48% of black respondents and 53% of Hispanic respondents agreed that they would ride more if there were protected bike lanes, while only 44% of white respondents said the same thing.
See, and this is the thing where I think it's very important. We've had conversations on and off, Mike, with people about issues like this where it's like, vehicular cycling or whatever. It's like there's some dude who wants to go out and wear a uniform and, like, you know, fight cars.
Right.
And because he's white and male, it's easy for him to do
so
that.
It's so easy.
I would say that we, just like, what is it, the slogan that traffic planners in Portland have used is like 8 to 80. And so there's that. I'm not going to try and make up a slogan about, like, ethnicity or whatever. But I think, like, there should be a similar idea that, like, basically the people who are either more comfortable or more capable, like the people who can be vehicular cyclists, you know, bully, good on you. Like if you want to go out and fight cars, that's great. But not everybody wants to do so.
Well,
and our cities need to be better designed for just to make it possible for everybody.
Some of us get tired of fighting every battle.
Yeah.
Like
it's fucking tiring. Yeah.
I don't mind being a vehicular cyclist a lot of times, especially going down division.
Well, for you, it's a sport. You know, it's my, that's why you're the king.
But there's so many other things that I have to fight, like, not necessarily on a daily basis, but a lot of times that are not related to bicycling. And so, like, getting on my bike generally is something I love to do, and I generally enjoy, like, you know, riding around town. But I don't enjoy it if I have to, like, make it an issue or make it a stance. Sometimes I do enjoy making that stance, but sometimes it's just one more thing out of, like, all other stances I've had to make throughout, throughout a day or week or whatever.
And we're talking about bicycling. That was a train horn.
Oh, my gosh.
Might have been the Amtrak about that time of day. Anyways, that's the thing where, sorry, I lost my train of thought with the train. But we're thinking about the idea that, like, basically everyone needs to be able to do this. And bicycling as recreation is something that is available for some people.
Well,
but bicycling as transportation is, like, a lot more of what people are using. And I would venture, I guess, that the people who are the victims of these fatalities mentioned are probably not doing it for fun.
No. That article itself actually talks about how, like, you know, most of the people who are riding, like, most of the minorities who are riding bikes are not riding it because they want to ride a bike.
Right.
Or they are riding it because they want to ride a bike, but they want to ride a bike due to the fact that, like, our situation has demanded us or necessitated a bike.
It's not a choice. It's just like, these are my options, either this or walk.
This is the best of my options.
Or take the bus and be gone for 5 hours a day.
Yeah.
Additional.
It's been pretty interesting. I apologize if I'm talking out of turn here, but I think a lot of the issues of race in our country have been coming up a lot, especially around, like, the police shootings that have been getting a lot of media attention.
Well, it's a good time to talk, because it's like, finally there is enough attention that we can't ignore it.
We're actually talking about it now.
Right.
And I think it's bled into these other things. Mm-hmm. You know, why is it that 28% of those killed while cycling are Hispanic? Why is it that 23% of those killed while cycling are African American?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not because African Americans or Hispanics can't bike or, like, are biking in the wrong places.
Yeah.
It's because the places that they're biking in are so sorely neglected.
Yeah. And there's systemic.
And there's other issues along with it, too.
It's systemic inequalities that make it difficult for these things to happen. And that's the thing. Like, as we're talking about simpler living here, it's not just, like, simple living because, like, it seems like a good idea for a certain subset of the population. It's because, like, until everybody has what they need to live simply, we're not going to have a good, it's not going to be the good life. It's going to be
right. And you know, I love what bike advocates are doing here and abroad, but bike advocates are by and large white people of middle class to upper middle class, stations in life.
Yeah. We just need to keep in mind, me speaking as a white person, that, you know, when we advocate, and we advocate in all sorts of ways, not just the official channels, but, like, every other thing as well. Like, your lifestyle is an advocacy. Like, you got to advocate for everybody.
Well, and yeah, as a person of color, for somebody to just say, like, well, you should just, you know, get up and get on your bike and go. Like, it's not always that easy for someone of color or for someone of financial or social background, you know, having some things holding them back. It's really not that easy. I think that's one of the things, like, we're very spoiled here and I love it, but it's one of the things I think we miss out a lot on, mm-hmm. is all of the barriers of cycling that happen for other people.
Yeah. And those barriers exist here in town. Like, we've had various guests come in and talk about, like, you know, not all of Portland is the same. And there are certain places in Portland where those barriers exist as well. It's just, there are fewer of them in this region than in other places in this country or in the world. But yeah. Does this next one tie into this?
This next one kind of ties into it, and I'm going to kind of edit it a little bit as I go.
All right.
Just because it's huge.
It is a long article.
As long as it is here in front of us, it's actually much, much longer. It's a really great article, and we're going to link to it, and I encourage everybody who goes to our site to check out this article. It's really well written.
Bring us the salient points.
From lastreetsblog.org, man is shot and killed by officers that he called to help search for a stolen bike. Is it a livable streets issue? The idea that someone's race or status can be separated from their ability to move through the public space is a sentiment I come up against constantly or consistently in a variety of forums within livable streets advocacy community. It manifests both in non-inclusion of such issues in policy, like Vision Zero, and in the categorization of the hostility of the public space to people of color as separate from issues of livability. It doesn't mean advocates don't care about the problem, but it does mean that they may not know where it fits into livability or how. We've done very well as a community at identifying the proper outlets through which to address the biases against cyclists held by law enforcement, and doing so has facilitated mobility and enhanced the quality of life for many urban residents who've taken up more active forms of transportation. But we have more to do. We also need to acknowledge the very vehicle that represents freedom for some residents is often seen by law enforcement as an opportunity to limit the freedom and mobility of others. Because as long as accessibility to the public space remains fraught for such a large proportion of the population, our streets can never be considered fully livable or complete.
So the headline is what? Man is shot and killed by the officers he called to help search for stolen bike.
There's a whole story within this story about a guy. He calls these cops saying, like, hey, someone stole my bike, and him and his friends are out looking for them, for the person who stole their bike as well. And the cops come up to these people's friends and, like, proceeds to arrest them, even though they didn't match, of course, they didn't match the description given to the police.
Sure.
And the situation just gets more and more exacerbated. And the guy who actually called the cops to say, like, hey, come look for my bike, goes to explain to the cops, these aren't the people you're looking for, and he gets shot and killed.
Yeah. It's an intense encounter. It's an intense anecdote. It's like you would think that, especially given how high all the visibility of all these other related kinds of stories, other people being shot by law enforcement, like it's been an enormous conversation these days, you would think that that would perhaps happen less often. But I feel like when we're talking about these issues, it's easy for this conversation to get swept up into, it's like either you side with all cops or you side with all, like, victims of cops.
Sure.
And I think it's more useful. Obviously, like, the particulars of each particular incident can be sorted out and figured out. But again, the key point as we're thinking about these things is, how do we make our world a better world for everybody?
Sure.
And we're on the way to that conversation. Again, like, it sucks that it's coming into the public view in this way, but it's in the public view and we have to deal with it.
Well, one thing that is pointed out in this article is how, like, the bicycle, for some people, it's viewed as this, like, freeing vehicle, as, like, you know, I'm no longer tied to the oil. I'm no longer, like, tied to whatever, you know, to the car and whatnot. And some people look at someone biking and will, like, automatically think that. But for a lot of people, either of poorer neighborhoods or for neighborhoods of color, the bike represents, this person is downtrodden. This person probably has DUIs. This person probably can't afford a car.
Sure.
This person is delivering drugs because it's easier to do by bike. And it colors not only how law enforcement sees the bicycle, but it colors how we see the bicycle. Like, it's not just law enforcement. Like, law enforcement, unfortunately, are, you know, maybe more in the spotlight because they have guns, and unfortunately they use them, and it gets really tragic. But
you're saying these reinforce patterns that, like, it's not just law enforcement.
No.
This is a cultural thing.
No,
there's a lot of people
who are having
similar issues, but instead of a gun, they have the way they look at someone or the way they treat someone or the assumptions they make about their neighbors.
This is going to be a little difficult to hear for some of us, but I would go so far as to say that if we were all carrying guns, there would be a lot more of those types of shootings.
And that's why there are laws against, well, about gun ownership.
Well, true.
But, yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, it's because we have this culture of division and this mm-hmm. culture of class, you know?
Right.
That, like, what these encounters of law enforcement are showing is a larger illness of our culture.
Yeah.
And not, it's not just cops.
Mm-hmm.
It is cops, but yeah. It's not just cops.
Right.
Anyways.
Yeah. So, I mean, that we're not going to find an answer in this conversation for sure,
no.
But I'm glad you brought it to my attention, and I'm glad that this is a conversation, again, that's happening here, and will continue to happen.
And again, like, I like how it's this person writing says, like, you know, yes, I write for a Livable Streets blog,
uh-huh.
but issues of race, issues of law enforcement are also part of Livable Streets. Like, it's all a whole.
Yeah.
You know, it's,
well, it goes back to what James Longhurst was saying about the streets being a public commons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We are invested. Yes.
We're invested in making, like, public life still, you know, simpler and better for everybody.
Right on.
So, yeah.
All right. Lastly, what's happening on Southeast Clinton?
What is happening on Southeast Clinton?
From bikeportland.org.
You mean the street, the bicycle boulevard, the neighborhood greenway
the
in
neighborhood,
Southeast Portland?
Yes.
Adjacent to Division Street?
New traffic data tells the story. I picked up a incomplete article here.
It's okay. I see a bar graph, which is fun because there's multiple colors.
Let's talk about. So there was the road work on Division, and that diverted a lot of automobile traffic on to Clinton, which was
lots of construction on Division Street, which means that while they're constructing things, they have to send the traffic elsewhere. Sadly, as we've covered in with previous guests and over previous shows, a lot of that kind of diverted to Clinton Street, and those patterns are still kind of active, right?
Right.
I mean, I don't know if we can blame it all on the construction, but we can definitely say that more people are driving on Clinton than they used to.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we can't blame it all on the construction. And maybe you can't really blame it on any one thing, but I might go so far as to say it's at least a result.
I want to blame it on a biscuit place.
It's because of Pine States.
No, it's not.
No.
Just kidding.
Just kidding, guys.
Just kidding.
Just kidding.
This is all for satirical purposes.
Anyways, yeah, so there was a lot of complaint about automobile traffic, and the powers that be said, well, it's because of the construction. Once the construction's over, things are going to return to normal.
Ah.
And that was the hope. And it doesn't seem to be the case. According to traffic counts released by the city Tuesday morning, it has not returned to normal. Westbound peak hour auto traffic on South Clinton or Southeast Clinton near 25th remains 55% higher than it was in 2008. Eastbound traffic during the evening rush hour, by contrast, is up just 16%.
You know, that's interesting. So, I'm curious about this.
People are going out or going into town, towards downtown.
Right.
On Southeast Clinton, using Southeast Clinton a lot more, but apparently not using it as much.
So people who aren't familiar with Southeast Clinton, just to explain, the physics is that westbound towards downtown is downhill, and eastbound out of downtown is uphill. And apparently, the westbound downhill traffic is up 55%, which is interesting. Because I don't know that I've heard anybody complaining specifically about morning time commutes. Like, I haven't heard a lot of the stories.
I've mostly heard the complaints happen during the evening and afternoons.
Yeah, so that 16% of traffic increase, as, you know, as the traffic division counted, means that because people are bicycling uphill, they're traveling slower. Vehicles are more apt to try and pass them.
Yeah.
It could be that
the more difficult interactions happen.
Right, because a vehicle driver, an auto driver, is not going to be necessarily excited about waiting behind a bicycle. But I feel like there would be more people on the streets and more people who would notice problems as they're riding more slowly uphill.
Yes.
Maybe they're already also hot and sweaty because it's summertime. Maybe they had a bad day at work. So it's just one more thing that's happening on their way home. But That it's very interesting to me because I haven't heard a lot of people complaining about traffic in the morning. But maybe that's because in the morning,
you're rolling downhill.
Pretty easy to do about 20 miles an hour on a bike, right? Yeah. I mean, they're thereabouts.
Yeah.
Between 15 and 20. So, yeah. Huh. That's very interesting.
Yeah. I was surprised to find that out. I will add another dimension that I don't know will be counted.
Okay. Segues.
It'd be interesting to see this kind of data show up, though, is how much of the non-peak evening traffic is due to the fact that people are trying to find parking spots so that they can go to all of these newer places.
Okay.
Division.
So people are not commuting home on Clinton Street from work.
No, this They're is just like post, this is post like,
yeah.
Commute hours.
Uh-huh.
I've had a lot more, tense interactions with vehicles, during those times.
Okay.
On Clinton.
Dinner time.
Than I have on Division.
Yeah, yeah. The character of the neighborhood, traffic-wise, has changed. I will say that. I've noticed that as I've ridden through the area. I mean, again, another thing we won't put a bow on tonight, but it's fascinating.
No, these are just like open questions and things to think about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think there was a tweet from Jonathan from Bike Portland about what would happen if we made it illegal for bicycles to be passed by motorized vehicles on, you know, neighborhood greenways or whatever.
Oh,
that's an interesting thing. And I've definitely, I'm not a guy that just puts myself out there all the time, but I have taken to riding right in the middle of the lane, right over the center of the Sharrow.
I've pretty much
like the
done
tip
that
of the Chevron.
From here on out.
Yeah, I started doing that, and it's kind of a, you know, the lane positioning. Again, I'm not saying that like that alone makes me an advocate for all people everywhere, but I feel like that in
you
one
do your part.
Part. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though I'm not the guy who's like, I want to be a road warrior. I'm a big vehicular cyclist guy. I find myself doing that.
And how much of that really like helps the discourse of things anyway?
Well, generally it doesn't. But I also find myself on Clinton Street when I'm there riding in the middle of the lane over the Sharrow.
No.
Because I feel comfortable enough that I can take the flack if there is some.
Yeah.
And I would like to create a precedent for people who might not feel comfortable doing that themselves.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So kudos to you
and
to anybody
kudos to you
who will kind of stick their neck out.
Yeah. And here's to hopefully a more equitable and simpler future. Peak oil can't come fast enough, am I right? Well, are we is it a good time to close ourselves out?
I think so.
All right, before we do, I just want to mention there's one person that there's a bunch of mail probably in my mailbox I haven't gotten to yet, but Shelley and Troy became brand new generous donors, and I won't say how much they donated per month, but they are donating a lot per month. So they are helping us out very much with our expenses and you know, with the future development of the show. So thank you, Shelley and Troy. Much appreciated.
Thank you for that new ivory back scratcher.
That's right. That's exactly. We already have it. Yeah, check this.
Ah.
Can you hear that?
You can feel the relief.
Yeah, that's a good back scratcher. All right. Well, thank you all for hanging out with us for an hour and a half, and thank you for indulging me and having me back to the studio.
I'm sorry.
No, I wasn't talking to you. I was talking to the listeners.
Oh, no. Yes.
When I'm talking to you, I'll let you know.
So, yeah, what's been happening is every time I have gone over to look at something on the interwebs that I've posted, like our show notes, the GarageBand quits on us.
Oh, it's like multitasking type stuff,
so,
or like hard drive speed or whatever?
Apparently it doesn't like it when I do that.
Okay, so we'll pull the audio from the backup recorder this
week. Yeah, there's a couple different spots. But that's why I'm going to read show notes off of my device here.
Oh, sounds good.
So you're going to have to start us out, though.
Okay.
Okay. And
thank you for listening to the Sprocket Podcast. Go to thesprocketpodcast.com.
Email to thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com.
Check out the phone number. It's 503-847-9774. Call or text.
Twitter at Sprocket Podcast.
Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music, Hurtbird for our headlines.
Marcus Norman for graphic design.
And thanks to our sustaining donors for supporting our show costs. It's Logan Smith, Johnny K., Shadowfoot,
Katrina Mellengard, Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson,
Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson,
Cameron Lane, Richard Wazinski, Tim Mooney,
Orange and Purple, Glenn Kubish, Matt Kelly,
Jim Gooden, Eric Wise, Doug Cohen Miller,
Todd Parker, Scott McAllister, Morgan, Chris Gonzalez,
Dan Gebhardt, Zoe Campagna, John Blood,
Allison Wiley, Andy Brunner, Dave Knows,
Lars V., Chris Smith, Christy Kaster,
Caleb Jenkinson, JP Cooley, Peanut Butter Jar, Matt,
Patrick Archane, Gabriel Trainer, Sebastian Poole,
Marco Lowe, Rich Otterstrom, Andrew Alderson,
Drew the Welder, Anna, Krista Skukas,
Marco Lowe, Rich Otterstrom, there's a bunch of them, John Wasserman, and Andre Johnson.
Look at all that time.
How about that?
Go brush your teeth.
And go to bed.
Listening to Open Roads Broadcasting.